Please give us some very practical techniques and ideas to incorporate moments of stillness into our daily routine. Many people ask this question, especially when you go to work. It's so hard to find a quiet place to meditate. But I've suggested this to someone. There is one place you can go, which is called the toilet. You just go in there and you sit on the seat. It's nice and comfy and no one will disturb you there. Even your boss will probably think you're constipated. So they won't disturb you in there. So you can go in there and sit down and put your right hand over the left hand. You can sit up straight and you can let go of all your baggage and be still and peaceful. But be careful you don't get into jhanas on the toilet. Otherwise you'll be there for 4 or 5 hours and they will call the police or something because they think that you're really sick. So it is important to do that, to find places to become still and peaceful. Number two, because it is an investment of time for the afternoon. 10 minutes or 15 minutes on the loo doing jhanas. Well, maybe not jhanas. But 10 or 15 minutes relaxing, being peaceful, means that you make up that time in the afternoon with greater efficiency. You get more work done in less time and higher quality work as well. And I was mentioning earlier to someone interviewed Dell Computing. In their headquarters they have such a time out room, like a meditation room. Any worker at any time of the day can go into that time out room. It is screened, so you cannot get SMSs, text messages, no mobile phone calls, nothing. Because there you are supposed to relax and rest. And they do that because they know when their workers aren't stressed out, it means they're healthier, they don't take so much time off work, they're sharper, they get more work done. It is basic common business sense. And I teach that to many, many corporations. And I mentioned earlier, that's now on the Harvard Business School blog. Investment for the afternoon. So that's actually how you can do that. And if you're running a company, you just incorporate that in your company. You'll do very well. The profits will go up. And the staff turnover will go down. In other words, it's good business sense. And if you're a worker, you introduce that. Half an hour meditation class. And at lunchtime, you get many workers who want to come up and join your class. And then it means your boss will say, wow, this is a really good worker. They're not just doing their own thing. They're helping the morale and the efficiency of the company. And then you'll be promoted to CMO, the Chief Meditation Officer of your company. A new position which you can start in your company and you'll be very, very successful. And how do you know, Paul? So do you know Paul Harrison, a Perth guy famous for meditation workshop? What do you think of his teachings? That, it's not Paul Harrison, it's something Harrison. What's his name?
Eric
Harrison, yeah. He used to come to our center in Nollamara, so he learned it all from us, and then he went to teach it and charge money for it. So you can get it from the source. This is the cheapest and the best. Have you met Jack Cornfield, Ajahn? Yeah, I remember Jack. He had a reputation in Thailand. Actually, not a good one. So he was a bit of a scallywag when he disrobed. But the last time I met him is interesting. He was supposed to be, this is the inside information for you, he was supposed to be a Vipassana teacher. In other words, no jhanas or anything like that. Just, you know, do the scanning of the body, notice your feelings, notice them rise and fall. But when I went over there, I went over to Barre, Massachusetts, and Joseph Goldstein, he wanted to have tea with me. So he invited me, and we had all his senior teachers, and they were quizzing me about jhanas. And they're talking to me, you know, jhanas, what's this, what's that? And I said, I thought you guys were into insight meditation. He said, no, that was past. Now they're into jhanas. And the same with when I went over to the West Coast, that's where Jack Cornford is, and Spirit Rock, they did the same thing. They're all sitting down, they were bribing me with tea and cheese, and then they were asking all these questions about jhanas, including Jack. So that's where they're at these days. We've converted them. Vipassana is old stuff. Jhana is the new wave of meditation. And you're on the new wave here, seeing it from the experts. Dear Abby, that must be Abbott. Is that right, Abby? I don't know, anyway. This evening, sitting by the stupa, a group of us experienced one of nature's nimittas. We saw colours, flashing lights, beautiful sounds. These nimittas progressed to jhanas as we went deeper into bliss. Forgetting our bodies, our breath, ourselves, we became one with everything. Over an hour of bliss brought about by the awareness from meditation. Did that happen, or were you just imagining it because of the thunder and the lightning? If it was a jhana, you would not have heard the lightning. That's what sometimes happens in here. People are meditating. And there's people from overseas, they want to take photographs, so they take a photograph of you. I saw the nimitta, alas, it was a nimitta. No, it was a flash of the camera, never mind. But anyway, it's great. If you saw the colours and flashings and beautiful sounds, because there was a little bit of a storm this evening, then that may just be enough to trigger the memories of the jhanas, and off you go. Dear Ajahn, when someone starts getting jhanas in their meditation practice, do they need to become celibate? Why not? It's not that, you know, sex is just very dangerous. You have sex and you end up getting babies. And that's 20 years of pain and suffering. Especially, you know, when they're very young, you have to look after them all the time. And when they get to 13 or 14, then you've got to look after them all the time and worry about them because they get into trouble with the police and drugs and goodness knows what else. But jhanas are great. You get more bliss and no problems. If you want company, get a dog or a cat. They don't cost a lot of money and they don't cause you trouble. The dogs never talk back at you. And they never go out at night. Well, cats go out at night, but who cares? But if your daughter goes out at night, then you get very, very scared. So I say, just get a dog or a cat. And this also lowers the population. I've mentioned this, I think, on a previous retreat. People ask you, Ajahn Brahm, what are you doing for global warming? You know, you can't just be a monk and forget about the big problems facing this earth. And I reply by saying, I have no kids. Because the biggest problem with global warming is overpopulation. When we've got so many people on this planet, there's no water, we use so many resources, everybody just wants to fly everywhere and have big houses. The problem is too many people. So I'm doing my bit to reduce the overpopulation problem and global warming. So I'm sort of environmentally kosher. So it's nice for more people to become celibate. So many people now, because especially the Catholic priests being celibate and getting into big trouble, well, there's a big news in Australia having a commission for abuse by most of the Catholic clergy, people are now saying celibacy is unnatural. That's what they're going around saying. If you don't have sex, there's something wrong with you. And you know, they said exactly the same thing for gays and lesbians before. They said being gay is unnatural. And we can give you some injections to fix it. Like it's some sort of disease. Now we've gone beyond that now. It is natural. It's okay. So gay people have got their rights. But we celibates still have got no rights. People keep saying it's unnatural. So I've been threatening this. The next time we have a gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, I want it gay, lesbian and celibate Mardi Gras. And I'm going to get a float asking for celibate rights. It is natural. Stop discriminating against us. So no, you don't have to be celibate. But sometimes, why not? Can you do that? No. That's actually one time when I gave a talk in Singapore. You know, on the bliss better than sex, you know, jhanas. That's my keyword for it. And this, a couple of Chinese people from Singapore, they came up to me before the talk. They said, please Ajahn Brahm, please Ajahn Brahm, don't tell us we can't have sex. It's enough being a Buddhist giving up alcohol and all this other stuff, but please, leave us something. It was really funny the way they said that. Anyway, a bird whispered to me today. Someone was breaking noble silence. In order to convey her point of view about what she thought about another retreatant's meditation practice and what she said was not positive, I think it's very inappropriate to break the silence to openly criticize another's retreat. And this criticism took most of the day to sort out and get and let go of. Look, other people, they said something bad or good, I don't care what it was, and then it was gone. But in your head, that lasted all day. Who was at fault there? Was it the person who actually said something bad? No, that was their problem. Why do you keep all this stuff? Didn't I tell you with the simile of the toilet paper? Anything with shit on, you don't keep. So any word you hear which are criticism or breaking the rules or whatever, you don't keep that stuff. There's an old Chinese story I remember which somebody told me about these two hermits. And one lived on the top of the mountain, the one lived a little way down. And they became very famous in China. And they were so famous that the emperor, he was at his wit's end trying to get people to run his government, you know, ministers. They were all corrupt. If they weren't corrupt, they were incompetent. So he's wondering, who can I get to help run my empire? And someone said, well, you should get someone who's wise and virtuous. So he thought, hey, these two monks, at least one of them, maybe they could be my prime minister. Because we know that they're so virtuous, they live so simply, they don't get corrupt. And number two, they're just so wise, they always see things clearly. So he went up there, and there were a few generals in his army, and he went to the top hermit first of all, and he said, I really respect your wisdom and your virtue. Will you come and serve the empire by being our prime minister? And the monk said, excuse me a moment, your majesty. And he went to the stream to wash out his ears. He said, I'm terribly sorry, but there's some filth in my ears. And the emperor was wise enough to know what that filth was. The words he just said tried to invite him to be the prime minister. So the emperor said, oh, gee, I'm not going to get this monk to help out. So he went to the monk who lived down below. And before he could even ask that question of the second monk, the top monk's attendant ran down and said, and warned the second monk, said, don't drink the water, there's some filth in the water. And the emperor realized that none of those monks was going to do the job of being a prime minister. That's really good monks. They don't get involved in all this sort of stuff. But also, if they hear anything bad, they just wash their ears out. So you heard something bad, so go to your bathroom, wash your ears out, and that's the end of it. Don't keep it, for goodness sake. Someone calls you a pig, you know that old story, they call you a pig, how do you react? You go oink oink. Yeah, they're probably right. If someone calls you a pig, most people say, why do they call me a pig? They shouldn't have called me a pig. They've got no right to call me a pig. And you just realize they've called you a pig three more times. Every time you think about it, they call you a pig again. How stupid you are. So only allow them to call you a pig once, and then wash your ears out. Get the filth out of the ear. You hear someone else calling somebody a pig, or saying about their meditation's no good, wash your ears out. Don't keep it. Otherwise, you are the stupid one. And anyway, people who were just talking about each other's meditation, that really is dumb. What do I do as a mother when my mum, the grandmother, wants to instill their ideals, e.g. the Chinese language to my children, the grandchildren? As kids, they tend to speak English at home. That's why when they started school. And grandparents don't like it. What should I do? Oh, it's very difficult when you have grandparents. It's because they want to sort of do things their way, and that's just the usual way which grandparents want to do. So they want to teach the kids Chinese. Sometimes it might be helpful to teach the kids Chinese, you know, help with their career. They get more business opportunities. I don't know. But usually when the grandma is around, see if you can get the kids to go to play or something, and you just talk to grandma so she doesn't have to spend too much time looking after the kids, because it is very difficult. The mother's job is really to look after children, not the grandma or the grandpa. But grandparents like to, you know, to be with the children. That's why in places like Australia, the main job of grandparents is free childcare. So, you know, you can go off somewhere, you know, and you can dump the kids with the grandparents. So it's a difficult thing to do. And sometimes you just, especially if your grandparents, they want you to keep the old traditions. It's good to keep the old traditions until your grandparents die, and then you can actually just forget about them. Because some of those old traditions, sometimes they can even be harmful. They're not really good traditions at all. They're just superstitions. But now, if your grandparents really ask for it, sometimes just cut them a bit of slack and let them do it. And just tell your kids, no, it's just your grandparents, you can do that. But, you know, when they go home, you can, you know, don't have to speak Chinese. Or whatever. So just, grandparents, just try and respect them. They're not doing any harm. Hopefully. Dear Ajahn, our greatest loser. Anyway, why do you ask me those questions? I don't have kids. So I don't have a grandmother to tell me how to look after things. Anyway. Dear Ajahn, our greatest loser, I totally forgot to ask you at the interview 2 days today. I promised my sister that I would ask if your highest emptiness would be so kind to come to our home for fish and chips, with vinegar included, if you were ever in town in Malacca, Malaysia. Many thanks for everything always. That is bribery. You know my weak spot. Okay, I'm going to keep that just in case. Thank you for having this retreat place. I notice everyone smiles more day by day. And the reason is they're smiling a lot today because tomorrow they go home and have dinner. Only one more day to go. Yeah! Long live my emptiness. That's interesting. It's really interesting. You get more sort of crazy things in the first line. I cannot imagine the world without you. You just lack imagination. Thank you for such a beautiful retreat center. Delightful food, from Asian to Western food. Profound teaching and the same jokes that even I have heard many times. But they still make me laugh. Very good. You are the most wise and funniest person on earth. I don't know about that. Wise, I'll take, but funniest. Okay. So please, long live and keep good health. Praise to Bianca and Dania. I'm amazed this retreat is only run by two people. It's not run by two people. It's run by everyone here. Without your harmonious help, without you doing extra chores like little sweeping the bugs in the morning, or like cleaning the toilets, or just helping out, you know, in the kitchen, without you, this place couldn't run. So to each one of you, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Dear Ajahn Brahm, when I was meditating, that's boring, dear Ajahn Brahm. Anyway, when I was meditating this afternoon, I was much more stillness as ever in the retreat. Suddenly, a very bright light came into my eyes. In the middle of the light, there was something like Buddha image. When I was trying to look much more clear, the light and the image suddenly disappeared. Afterwards, I felt myself very tired for a little while. I had this experience before, and I found something strange about it. I'm not sure this is a good light or bad. Please advise. Is it good? Is it bad? Who knows? Good, bad. Who knows? Now that's good. So you saw a beautiful light. Seeing a Buddha in it, it just means your mind is a little bit complicated. So keep it simple. The more simple, the better the nimitta. But great, you see it's working. Such a shame you're going home tomorrow, whoever wrote this. But never mind. You can stay on a bit longer if you wish. All you need to do is shave off your hair. And we can... They say hair today, gone tomorrow. The Honourable Meditating Monk, okay? I have a question about how to let go of problems that others share with us. I've heard you mention being a trash can with a hole in the bottom. Can you explain how to do this in practice with metta, fellow meditator in training? It's easy. Look, I sit on there morning and afternoon. You come and tell me all these stories and all the troubles with your kids, with your husband, your wife, your business, your health. And I don't know anything about that. I've never been married. I've never had kids. I never had a mother-in-law, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But still, you come and ask me these questions, and I don't mind listening to you. And you know what I say? I say, very good, very good, very good. And you think, my goodness, that monk understands me. He's very wise. Now you know my tricks. But as soon as you go, I forget what you told me. I let it go. But that's one of the troubles. Some of you come up and say, oh, you know what I told you 2 days ago? I don't. I've forgotten it already. There's too many of you. And also, it means that as soon as I get up from there, I don't remember, I don't keep any of the stuff. Because if I did, if I was still concerned and worried about the last person in the interview, I would not be able to pay attention to the next person. I'd be still worried and thinking about the problem I just heard. My trash can would be so full, when the next person comes, I would not be open to them. So that's why, if you're going to be a counselor, if you're going to listen to people, as soon as that person has gone, you have to totally empty, so you can refresh yourself and be there for the next one. And then you can truly listen. That's a simple training of letting go of the past. You don't keep anything. I say it's like being a lotus leaf. A lotus leaf, you can pour Chanel No. 5 on the lotus leaf and it leaves no residue. You can't smell it afterwards. Or you can urinate on the lotus leaf and it leaves no residue. Because everything just falls off. The lotus leaf keeps nothing. So you try and be like lotus leaf. You hear somebody and they praise you and it leaves no residue. That's like pouring scent, perfume on the lotus leaf. It just rolls off. And people throw terrible stuff, shit stuff on the lotus leaf. And it all rolls off. It leaves no smell. They criticize you. They tell you their problems. You keep nothing. Then you can be a very wise, peaceful person. You can be loving, caring, sensitive to the person in front of you. But when they leave, you let it go. So you can be loving and caring and sensitive to the next person. Doesn't that make sense? It's so easy to do. It's much more fun. Just let it go. Why do you keep things? It's just bad habits. You know, just worrying about things which don't concern you. So if you learn how just to be peaceful, you can let all these things go, have a beautiful empty mind, like a trash can with a hole in the bottom. You don't have to keep anything. That's really important because I know many counselors. There was one person who used to, the first year I came here, would feed us, I think, every Thursday afternoon. And I remember she had this son. He was a very funny boy. Because you'd all ask him, sort of, he'd say, what was he used to ask him? He'd say, how's the weather today? And he'd always say 2 o'clock. You know, he hadn't figured out the difference between time and the weather. So it's always a very, we'd always ask him that. It's just a very, very funny kid. But his mother, after a while, she disappeared. And because she hadn't been coming for about 2 or 3 months to our temple, but her husband rang up, you know, is she there? And they found her a few days. She jumped off the bridge, committed suicide. And it was because she was one of these girls who would always be there for people, would listen to people's problems. But she never knew how to let go of those problems afterwards. She had a beautiful husband, a lovely kid, very beautiful life, but the problem she had was when she listened to other people, which she did a lot, she couldn't let it go. Her trash can became so full of other people's shit, she couldn't stand it any longer, and she jumped off the bridge. That was the Garrett Road Bridge in Maylands. It's a tragedy. So please, yes, love each other enough, you can listen to each other and be with each other when someone has a problem. But please, as soon as they go, please let it go. Otherwise you'll never have any freedom. And you worry all day and all night about other people's problems. You've got enough problems for yourself, let alone carrying around other people's stuff. So that's actually how you let go. Practice this meditation, let go of the past. Just don't worry about the future. Now's the place your future's being made. And then you can be so effective in life. You do so much. Thank you so much, Ajahn. This is the most wonderful time I've ever had in my life. You see nothing yet. Wait till the next retreat. It gets better and better and better. Happier and happier and happier. Thank you, Bianca. You are a wonderful lady. Where is she? Okay, I'll keep this for her. Thank you, I don't have enough words to thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Get the thesaurus out. There's lots of words in the thesaurus, in the dictionary. All the wonderful words. May you have a happy and long life. Hey, hang on. A happy and long life? How many people you know are really old who are happy? That's terrible if I have a long life. I won't be happy. You know, I'll lose all my teeth. Won't be able to walk, won't be able to see. Do you really, and I won't remember anything. So do you really want me to have a long life? No, just the right amount. Middle way. Not too long, not too short. So next time, may you be have happy and a moderate long life. Your honourable stillness. Yeah, it gets better all the time. Do you do any talks or retreats in Brisbane? Are you linked to any centres there with metta? Still see? Yeah, I give lots of talks in Brisbane. On the YouTube. You can get YouTube in Brisbane. Do you have any centres there? Yeah, again, YouTube. Every now and again, I go over to Brisbane or Sydney. When the karma is ripe, I will appear. When the karma is not ripe, I will not. How do you describe the moment of passing into first jhana? Stop, slowly drop, suddenly, metta. The moment of passing into jhana, you mean the whole process. You just let go and you just go in. People describe that in so many different ways. So it's a waste of time me telling you how I describe it. Because that will take away your fun. It's just like telling you the last episode of that soap opera series. Somebody told me there was one of the soap operas finished. Oh, that's right, they're telling me that House. Now, House, he was some series, because I was in Toronto, and they said they had the last episode of House in the series. And if I told you what the last episode, I would spoil it for you. So to tell you the last thing which happens before you go into jhana, I would spoil it for you. So you find out for yourself. May I know how long would each nimitta last? It only lasts for a moment. That's all there ever is in the timeless present. A moment, that's all there is. There never is any longer time than one moment. We think that there are days, hours and minutes. There's not. That's the illusion of time. All you ever have is now. Just like when you first came here, time is the same. It's an illusion. We think that time has passed. That time extends in the future. But the only time you ever have, the only time which is real, is now. So that's how long a nimitta lasts. one now moment. That's deep. Okay, do your highest King of Emptiness. You see, it gets more exaggerated every time. By the end of this, we should get really some interesting stuff. Dearest, it's dearest. Dearest Your Highness, King of Emptiness. I quite like that. You know, someone once gave me, they called me the Elvis Presley of Theravada Buddhism. Oh, that was really neat, I thought. That's because I like Elvis. Because he's called the king. Considering this is the last Q&A, here are my questions. In some Asian countries, a ghost can possess people when they're having no thoughts. Is it true? No way. I have witnessed one of those events. How to react on that and how to do something to handle that? Please guide me. You know that story in Opening the Door of Your Heart? When someone took someone possessed by a ghost to Ajahn Chah. The lady was crazy. Her eyes were wide. She was drooling, thrashing about, and shouting out all sorts of obscenities. She was mad, crazy, possessed by a wild spirit. And in those days, there was no psychologist or psychiatrist. They just take them to the monk. So they drag this lady to see Ajahn Chah. And you could hear her in the distance as they were dragging her in, screaming and shouting. And even though she was a Thai person, they're so respectful of the temple. But the language she was using was the coarsest, grossest, obscene words. And as soon as Ajahn Chah was told by the headman who came ahead, "We're bringing this crazy possessed woman to you to get exorcised." And he said, "Great." And he ordered one of the little novices, "Dig a hole. I want a hole, a big hole. Dig." And a couple of them digging like mad. He ordered another couple of novices, "I need some hot water, boiling water, lots of it." And so had these novices running around, getting a fire going, boiling these pots of water and digging a hole. And by the time this lady came there, she was like frothing at the mouth, screaming and shouting, and had these big Thai northeast farmers. They're incredibly tough people. Three or four of them is needed to hold her down. And in front of Ajahn Chah, she was screaming and shouting, trying to lunge at him. They had to stop her. She was so strong, as people are when they're possessed. "Quick, I need a bigger hole, more boiling water." None of us knew what Ajahn Chah was on about, but it's always interesting. Never a dull moment, you know, in a monastery. You think a monastery is a peaceful place, just meditating all day. But every now and again you get some excitement, a crazy lady comes there. And we didn't know what he was on about. And then he actually let us know what was happening. He said, "This is a very violent, bad, evil spirit which has got into this lady. The only way to cure this, we've got to put her in this big hole, pour boiling water all over her, then bury her. That's the only thing we can do to get rid of this monster." Even I thought Ajahn Chah might actually do that. He was so unpredictable. And certainly this girl being possessed, she thought that might happen to her. As soon as she heard that, she started to calm down. And before the water was boiled, she was sitting so meekly in front of Ajahn Chah with her hands up, taking the five precepts. And then she went back to the village for a sleep. That's how you exorcise these spirits. Was it a spirit? Or was it some craziness? But certainly there's something in a human being called self-preservation. If you think you're going to be thrown in a hole, boiling water poured all over you, and then buried alive, you get your act together pretty quick. And that's actually what happened. So that's how you should react. A lot of times, in all my life as a monk, I've only once seen someone possessed, and been really possessed. Many other times it was just psychological disorder. So, first of all, take them to the psychiatrist before you take them to the monk. And most times they never get to us because it is a psychiatric disorder, not possession. Some Mahayana nuns are allowed to accept money from the lay people. Ah, the lay people are making bad karma on this. Considering nuns and monks in Theravada style are not allowed to accept money for their own account. Exactly. It's much better to give the money to the monastery or the temple. What does monks and nuns need money for? You feed them, you look after them, you bring them cups of tea. What do you need money for? Sometimes people say, oh, you need money for travelling. I travel all over the world. I never take money. I don't need money. Sometimes people say, well, travelling alone, don't you need an attendant? I got lots of attendants. I go on Singapore Airlines, there's about 10, 20 attendants on there looking after me. You go on Thai Airways, even on the cheap airlines, Air Asia, they have attendants looking after you. What do I need an attendant to travel with you for? It's just extra money. So you don't need an attendant. You don't need money. Wherever you go, there's always someone to look after you. It's wonderful actually living without money. So that's why it's better not to give the money to the monks or nuns. Give it to the temple. You've got to be careful though sometimes, because some temples, the committee runs it, and they don't do a good job. So sometimes the monks and nuns, they have to have some input into the temple. Here at the Buddhist Society of West Australia, we try to make a balance of power. So the lay people don't have all of the control, but the monks don't either. So there's checks and balances. We've got two past treasurers here, the treasurer of our Buddhist Society, saying, you know how it works. So, you know, I have to go to the committee meetings and make sure everything's done okay. And if, you know, the monks aren't behaving well, you can actually tell the monks off if we're spending too much or whatever. So that's actually the way we run it here, and it's usually run pretty well. Please kindly explain what the difference between Yaka, Gandhaba, Peta, Asura. What do you want to know that for? So Yaka, they're demons. Gandhabas, they're supposed to, it's really weird, this is the old time, Gandhabas means like fragrant beings. Literally means worthy of being smelled. And the Gandhabas, they're supposed to be strange. They said they're present when babies are conceived. That was the old tradition over there. So they're just lower beings. Yakas are more violent and strong. Gandhabas are more sweet. Petas are the ghosts, the hungry ghosts. If you still like, for example, that you know you've, no one has inherited your money yet, and you're really, really concerned about it. If you sometimes, Petas guard their treasures because they're attached. If you can't let go, then you'll be a Peta. Ghost story. This is a nice ghost story, it's very funny. Many of you may know this character. Remember Jim Hanna? He used to have a pest control place. His ghost story? He had one of his friends. Now, this guy Jim, he was from Scotland. And he had a friend who'd migrated from England. And his friend, they'd come with another best friend from England. They bought a house and shared it together. They weren't gay, they were just two guys getting started in life here in Perth. And, you know, young guys, they'd bring their girlfriends round. It was just, you know, the house together, getting a job, getting going in life. And one of these friends, he was always a practical joker, always doing tricks. And he was the one who got cancer. It was terminal, he was going to die. And before he died, he told his friend, when I die, I'm going to stay in this house and I'm going to play tricks on you. And when he did die, he did play tricks. Now, little things, first of all, turning on the shower from cold to hot. You know, when you're having a nice warm shower, it suddenly goes cold. And turning the TV on and off. But this was, no, not a fake thing. This was the real one, because one day he came home from work and all the furniture from the lounge was in the front garden. And it was only just a practical joke. He didn't need to be scared. Because, you know, this guy said, oh, you know, his girlfriend could see him. It was just a nuisance, that's all. Just his old friend playing his old tricks. So he accepted him in the house, not scared, not doing anything, any harm. But when Jim came out for a cup of coffee, you know, they were talking about, oh, the ghost is still in the house. You know, plays jokes every day. I don't mind. It doesn't do any harm. Actually, it's quite good in the sense that I don't need a security alarm. Because, you know, he's a friend. He's my friend. He's my best mate. He's just still here, that's all. So if any burglar tries to come in, my friend will scare them away. So ghosts can be actually very helpful. You know, if there's a fire in the house, they wake you up. You know, they keep the burglars out, keep it safe, so you have nothing to worry about. So anyway, this is a friendly ghost, but when Jim went for a cup of coffee, he said, come on, there are no such things as ghosts. Yeah, he's here. No, I don't believe you. He said, I'll ask him, come on, prove you're here. And then there was a little pot plant on the coffee table. This is the way Jim described it. A leaf fell off the coffee table, off the plant. And then it didn't fall down, it flew horizontally. And then vertically down, so it was half on and half off the coffee table, right on the edge, balanced. And Jim, that's just a coincidence. Just a wind, something happened. Then another leaf broke off. Again, horizontal, straight down, perfectly on top of the second leaf, or the first leaf. So the two were right on top of each other. That is just fakiness. And the third leaf broke off. Exactly the same, horizontal, and right down on the third leaf. And Jim, he just got off of the chair, ran to the door, got in his car, and ran away. He was so scared. Now three in a row. You don't need to be scared. It's only a practical joker ghost. Doesn't do any harm at all. There's another family over here in Perth. They said when they had this ghost in the house, they just got used to it. But the trouble was, they had a TV, and whenever they were watching something, it would always turn, the channel would turn. Because the ghost wanted to watch his channel. So you may be watching a movie, and he wanted to watch the sport. It doesn't matter how many times you flip. No, the ghost could flip it any time he wanted. You know the solution to that? They just bought another TV. So they have their TV and the ghost has their TV. Then they can watch what they want and the ghost watches what he wants. That's a true story. They don't have to worry about these things. They're just ghosts, that's all. They're just beings. You just be kind to them. They look after you. And they do look after you. And the asuras, those are supposed to be in Buddhist cosmology. They're quite high devas, but they sort of always having fights with somebody else. So that's the asuras. So you want to read them out, read it out in the books, but you don't need to actually pay too much attention to that. Please tell me, is there any nice Buddhist monastery in London? There's nice fish and chip shops in London, but Buddhist monasteries... Yeah, just south of London, you've got Chitthurst Monastery. Just north, you've got Amrawati. So there's nice monasteries. So there's lots of monasteries. Just go onto Google, look, you know, Buddhism, London, and see what's there. Dear my super monk, my mighty monk, I just want to say thank you so much for your teaching us such beautiful Dharma. Wonderful in the beginning, wonderful in the middle, wonderful in the end. It hasn't ended yet. How do you know it's going to be wonderful in the end? You really are my superhero in life. The super monk. I wish you could multiply yourself. I'm trying. I'm getting bigger and bigger. So split. I wish you could multiply yourself so we could meet you anytime we wish in our country. And I really wish once it occurs in my mind that you will be cloned. I don't know if this was person who wrote this in Indonesia. But if you go into any of the bookstores in Indonesia... Actually, you see, they've got this cardboard cutout of me in the bookshops because my books are bestsellers over there. There's 1, 2, 3 in a row have been number one bestsellers. So in the big bookshops, the chain of bookshops, they're called Gramedia in Indonesia, you've got this big, it's life-size. You know, they're laughing about it. You've seen those, have you? So a lot of time, you've got some of my disciples from Perth, they've gone into the bookshop, Ajahn Brahmi's over here. Because it looks the same. When you go up, it's only a cardboard. So all you really need to do next is to put a little speaker in the back and just, you know, you can play sort of the iPod and just get the mouth going. And then you can put me in Indonesia and do a talk wherever you like. So, you know, like Madame Tussauds can even do better than that. They don't have a clone, that's just too difficult, but just have a wax dummy. And they can just, you know, put the the electronics in the back. And you can press a button, you know, whether you want to talk on grief or anger, on jhanas, or, you know, how to become enlightened, or how to deal with your mother-in-law. You have it, the whole list of things. You just press it, and then they go, bah, 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 bah. And then you can actually have, you know, the talks wherever you like. I often thought that, you know, this is a modern world. We have to get rid of all the superstition and modernize Buddhism. So we thought, drive-in monasteries. Why not? Because, you know, you're too busy to actually to go to the temple. So you can go in there and give your order. You can have holy water, chanting, especially chanting for a baby, chanting for good luck for examination, chanting so that boy will fall in love with you, whatever chanting you want. You have the whole list over there. And then actually after that, or meditation instructions, then you go to the window. And if it's holy water, they just get this little jet squirts water at you. And if it's chanting, you just put the headphone on and it gets the chanting for you. Advice on meditation. It's all just very easy to automate. Nimitta to questions, beautiful breath, whatever. And actually how to do it. And whatever you ask for, it always has the same instructions. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then you pay your money at the end. Everybody can make a lot of money that way. So you don't have this big nun's monastery with all these sadhus. They just have a drive-in temple in the middle of town. And then once we have it in Perth, we can franchise it to Sydney and Brisbane. You want it in Brisbane and London, you're looking for a nice temple. And Indonesia, in Jakarta and Medan and Singapore and Colombo and Melbourne, some people from Melbourne. And from Norway, where are you, John? And from Germany. So you just have the franchise. And it'd be, you know, the big M for big monk. And then you make a fortune and just you wouldn't have to keep bothering me all the time. I could retire then. Do you think that's going to work? Drive-in Buddhism. Drive-through or whatever, I don't know. You know, I say that because I've just been to Las Vegas before I came on this retreat. People always ask me, what happened in Las Vegas? You know my answer? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I'm not telling you. They had this big sign at the airport saying, remember, don't tell any people what happened. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. No, I was just giving lots of talks there. Okay, the supermonk, yeah, be kind. See you again, mighty monk. May I see you again in the next life. Who knows, maybe I'll be enlightened tomorrow. Very good, bye-bye. Dear my lovely monk, I'm going to get some bad ones at the bottom probably. A few months ago, before I split up with my spouse, I thought I wouldn't be able to take it. I thought it was the end of the world. I planned at the time to join this retreat to heal myself. The relationship was more than 5 years and I cherished it so much. I tried so hard to maintain and control this situation for almost 1 year. When I did break up in August, something funny happened. I spent one morning crying over it and at night I felt so relieved and so happy. I experienced the joy of letting go. I was so surprised. I remember you said, it's not the doing that is difficult, but the thinking. And the cause of suffering all the while is not because I didn't try hard enough, because I did try hard enough. My days afterwards were filled with happiness and a lot of positive. But once in a while, sometimes, I still think about it, like there's some unfinished business. Once in a while, I still feel a little sad. 1 to 2 out of 10 level of sadness. It's almost 3 months from now. How to let it go completely? You're doing really well. It will just go by itself. You got that far, the rest is really easy. So remember, don't look back to the past. No, be in the present moment, look to the future. I think my meditation these days are not really good. I'm not satisfied. I do have some progress, but not to the level of my satisfaction. I know you will say not to have expectation, but I'm afraid I move too slowly. The slower, the better. Remember the simile of the donkey and the carrot. That's an excellent simile because it shows you what the problem is. You go chasing things, you never reach them. Stop, for goodness sake. And everything which desire ever promised you happens when you stop desiring. That's what happens. You want things, you struggle because I think, well, if I want hard enough, if I desire enough, if I know the secret, then all these things which I love and desire will come to me. You find actually they go further away from you. where do you stop? And it's still. You find all the things you ever wanted in life. Contentment, peace, happiness, love are all there. An old Chinese saying. The village man was looking for fire to light looking for a flame to light the fire to cook his rice. He was looking with a candle, looking for fire here, looking for fire there. If he only knew what fire was, he would have cooked his rice much quicker. He was looking for fire with a candle. Where's the fire? Where's the fire? So we're trying to look for all these things with wanting. If we can only knew what wanting was, what peace was, we could be enlightened so much quicker. Just let go. You have peace. You've arrived here. So enjoy it. Can we get the recording after the retreat? I believe so. It will be available if your karma is ripe. Consider this as the last Q&A. I'm really thankful for all your wisdom. I learned a lot from them. You always look happy and smile. I'm jealous. That is because I've been doing smiling training. The 20 push-ups. Remember the 20 push-ups? One, two. It's an exercise like anything else. So exercise. Sometimes when I meditate, I feel like I'm imploding and falling into a deep relaxation. It's very enjoyable. Well done. Keep on going. Implode as much as you can. Implode until there's nothing left. Until you're totally empty. And that's the highest happiness. Dearest my super monk, Ajahn Ha Ha Hee Hee. Thank you very much for conducting this retreat. Your Dharma talks, good jokes. Now you have discernment. All those people who say they're bad jokes, you don't know what you're talking about. You just, you know, just like people who don't appreciate enough fine foods or just beautiful things in life. You know, just, these are very refined jokes. They're very... Okay, I'm not getting it. Ghost stories, meditation guides, interviews and heartwarming, Winnie the Pooh smile really makes me feel peaceful and happy. I can't believe that this retreat's ending soon. And tonight is the last question and answer session. I hope I'll be able to join your retreat again in the future. You rock, super monk. Okay, the one who can't reach Nimitta is not frustrated enough to be able to get an insight. Okay. Next question. Dear Ajahn Brahm the Great. This is really doing good to my no self. Somebody actually sent me, one of the monks I knew sent me this cartoon of a restaurant. It had all these people lining up for the self-service counter and all these monks lining up for the no self-service counter. If there's a monk who can read minds, can he still read minds if other person is thinking in a language that the monk does not know of? No, you can't escape that easy. Because when you read a person's mind, it's just, you're reading the thoughts which are behind the language. So even though you try to think in a foreign language, you won't be able to trick me. For example, I'm thinking Japanese. Can a Thai monk who can speak Japanese know what I'm thinking? Yes, they can. You can't escape that easy. Why, if someone knows and understands anatta, can they not let go of attachments and craving? Or why is it so difficult to let go of attachments and craving? You can't do it. If you do things, then that's not anatta. This is a process. It's cause and effect. It's automatic. So once you understand anatta, then the process starts to work. You start to let go more and more. You can't rush it. You can't slow it down. It's just cause and effect. It's nothing to do with you. Actually, you can slow it down by getting in the way. But you can't make it go faster. So it's this automatic process. Once you're a stream winner, the whole attachments all unravel. They get less and less and less and less until they fade away. All cause and effect. That's all it is. So you can't do it. You can't let go. It's like attachments let you go. Dear mighty, mighty monk, I've heard that in some places the monks are receiving too many robes from the lay people due to katina offerings. And some people suggest that offering robes to the monks are getting useless and pointless, and hence resulting in no significant good karma. Is this true? Of course it's true. But I use one robe, and I wear it a lot, because I have to go on aircraft and wear it all the time. So one robe lasts a couple of years. And you get heaps and heaps of robes. We've got hundreds of robes. We keep those because we live in hope that someone like you would ordain. Vain hope. But, so what we've done here, whenever it's a Katina day, because people, I'm being quite honest with you, because you like offering robes, those robes cost a lot of money. Actually, how much do they cost in the shops? I think they're about $200-$300 or something. So instead of doing that, for kindness to you, we've got all our old robes, we've got a whole heap of them, we put them outside, and you don't buy them, you give a donation. Instead of $200 or $300, $20, $25. So it's very cut price. You're very lucky. And you offer it to me, and I sort of say thank you, and it goes in here and round the corner and comes back again. It's recycled. And everybody wins, because otherwise, if you kept offering all these robes, we'd have too many, and they cost a lot of money from the shop. So all the money goes into the temple, and you get your happiness. But it is true, we get so many robes. You know what the best offering is? And this is from the Mahakamavibhanga Sutra. The offering which gives you the best returns, the biggest bang for your bucks, is to give an offering to the Sangha of both genders. Not just to the monks and the nuns, to build their monasteries. That's much better bang for your bucks than given even to a Buddha. Certainly more than given to an arahat, a holy monk, or a holy nun. To give to the Sangha of both monks and nuns. And you are so lucky in Perth. Now we have both sanghas here. In many countries in the world, like Burma, you don't have both sanghas, you only have the monks. In Thailand you have both sanghas, but people don't admit it. They're there. But in many other countries, in England you don't have both sanghas. In Germany, is there any bhikkhunis there? But anyway, here in Australia, in Perth, we are the leaders. Are the forefronts in giving equity to both genders. Because you know what I did 3 years ago, give the bhikkhuni ordination, quite into trouble in Thailand, but you get more bang for your bucks by giving to both genders. So that's why we have a bhikkhuni monastery. And quite frankly, that needs it more than anybody else. Being to Bodhinyana Monastery is pretty well developed. You've got all they still need more kutis over there, but look, we've got 20 kutis over there. 21 actually, that's enough. But the bhikkhunis, they've got hardly anything. They're in Dharamsala. So they're the ones who really need it. And those offerings, you're getting the biggest bang for your bucks. That's according to the suttas. And also, you're doing something historic. And really, I'm not exaggerating there, this is a historic time for Buddhism. And this organization here, the Buddhist Society of West Australia, is at the forefront of this. Pushing Buddhism into the new age, if you like. Modernizing it. Having gender equality. And all of you women, here, you know what it's like to be treated as a second-class person. And we're not having that here in Buddhism in Australia. We're having equity, full respect for both genders. That took a lot of sacrifice from me, as you know. And now we want sacrifice from you guys to actually build this place for them. So that's why we have a building project.